This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 46, 63 Not Out. On the show this week, we have a tribute to Phil Hughes and what that shows about the wider cricketing community. We talk also about cricket coaching and playing cricket as we always do. We have some follow-up discussing how to go from 75 runs up to 100 in your training. We help a player who is having trouble in his first two or three overs as a bowler, and Bonga's back, and we talk about how he's going to make his way back into the A-team. Good luck, Bonga. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching or playing better cricket. And if you want to improve your game, you're in exactly the right place. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I look after things here, and my job is to keep a tight rein on the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garraz. Are you going to behave yourself today?
I think so. I'm feeling on good behaviour.
I never get any problems with you.
Oh, thank you.
So the first thing, I guess, that we want to talk about is the events of recent times, which is not something that we talk about very often. We tend to talk about cricket coaching and playing cricket, and a lot of that stuff is timeless. We don't really talk about the news, but something which has struck, I think, everyone who's involved in cricket at pretty much every level is the death of Phil Hughes, which is tragic. And so I thought we would just have a quick mention of that and discuss how that's influenced us over the last few days.
Well, it's incredibly tragic, isn't it? And, you know, as it all unfolded, it was almost unbelievable, wasn't it? That, you know, it was so public, and we saw him get hit. And then I think really, as all of the events transpired, it became fairly obvious relatively quickly that it was not going to be a great outcome at all at the end of it. When people were flying in from all over Australia, I think the news had got around the closer knit community in Australia, and it's incredibly sad. And you know, watching the funeral this week, I don't think there was anybody who didn't shed a tear when people were speaking. And obviously, one of the things that stood out this week has been Michael Clarke's leadership and Michael Clarke's connection and what he's done with the family and tried to support them. And it's going to be fascinating to see how Australia take, how long they take to the grieving process, and what impact that has on some of their cricket as well. It's just incredibly sad.
It is. And it's good to see that there have been positive things come from this, because it's, you know, everybody is very upset about it, but there's been such a coming together of a not only in the cricket community, but also outside of cricket, and how people have seen that when something like this happens, there's a time just to not really think too much about the practical side of things and talk about things like helmets or technique or anything like that. I mean, there is a time to talk about it, but there's also a time just to say this is very sad, and there's not really much more to say about it than let's just quietly reflect and not make too much noise for a little while. And that's kind of why I like the Put Your Bats Out tribute that happened, because that really is a simple thing that people can do, but it's the epitome of saying nothing, really, isn't it? You just take a photo of your cricket bat, and that's all you need to say about it.
Oh, exactly right. And I think it just shows what the cricket community and then the you know, the outside world of the cricket community are like. And it's been incredibly sad, but also, you know, I've been incredibly proud of being a cricketer this week. Mm. You know, the way that people have galvanised and supported each other, and obviously we've all felt it, haven't we? that's the thing. Yeah. You know, I met him twice, and I think probably for a collective 12 minutes in my life, but, you know, it's affected me, and it's affected people that never met him. I think the tributes have been fantastic, and you know, the Put the Bats Out thing, I don't know about you, mate, but I was going through Twitter the other night, going through them, and every single one was getting to me.
Oh, it's so poignant. You know, I think it's the absence of, especially with social media, and you know, it's so much that people can you know, you can write anything, but sometimes just having that symbol is so much more powerful than anything you can say.
Oh, I agree.
Okay, let's move on back into more cricket coaching ground, because we've had some follow-up from one of our listeners. And if you remember a while back, there was a coach in Australia called Mark who was giving us some excellent feedback regarding coaching batting. And he's come up with another fantastic email to us, far too long to read out in full. But I very much enjoyed it, and I put most of the email into our show notes this week. And it was following up on an older episode, episode 39 in this series, talking about the ability to go on and register a century. Do you remember that question?
We
were saying it was a nice problem to have.
Mm.
And what Mark said, which was I found was quite interesting, was that when he talks about batting, especially scoring big runs, he talks about doing it in three stages, where the first couple of stages are what people practice the most, the start of your innings and, you know, between 25 and 75 runs, somewhere in that region, when you're going well and everything seems to be going your way. But it's the third phase that people don't work on enough, and that's when you're starting to get tired, perhaps dehydrated, and your energy levels are dropping and your concentration levels are dropping, but you've still got to make it all the way through to whatever your target is. And he talks about building in that kind of practice into net sessions. So he says, I strongly recommend that batsmen start to practice the third phase more by doing a lot of heavy fitness work for 45 to 60 minutes prior to nets, thus tiring themselves out before they get into nets. This way they're going to be tired and fatigued and have fresh bowlers at them, which forced them to fight through the fatigue and maintain their concentration levels under duress. They'll also get to recognise the signs of fatigue, both mentally and physically, when they're in a match, and should develop some personal ploys to deal with them too. And I think that's excellent advice.
I think it is excellent advice. I'm not sure that it's just specifically there targeting the 75 to 100 or the last phase or the nervous 90s. I think that's just a good thing to do anyway, because by fatiguing the body, and particularly we know that when you get your heart rate over 150, the great thing about that is it simulates pressure and simulates the type of pressures that we have when we first go into bat, or maybe when a key time happens in a game, or it could be in the nervous 90s or even further on. So I think it's a good practice anyway. And you don't have to just do it with batting. You can do it with keeping as well. It's something I can do. You can do it with fielding, you know, make somebody do some really good hard work, maybe not quite as long as 60 minutes, and then get them to, you've got one throw, you've got to execute it, you know, and that sort of critical moment control stuff, isn't it? You know, when the pressure's going, your heart's going, and that often happens in a game. If I'm standing at point and the ball gets knocked into me, and it's the winning and losing of a game is going to be either my ability to hit the stumps, or if I miss, then we lose, then that's simulating pressure. And if I can have that with a being fatigued at the time that I do it, then that's a good practice to have. So, yeah, I love the practice. I wouldn't say it's specifically looking at that later phase in a innings, but I think it's just good practice anyway. And then the second thing I'd say is that I think our perceptions and our expectations have changed as batters over the years. You know, I can remember if you got 100, it was like a major, major, major thing, wasn't it? But now people, because of the professional game, people are lodging quicker hundreds and they're lodging bigger scores than have ever happened before, really. And your scores of 150 plus in test matches are far more common than they were 15, 20 years ago. You know, things like Graham Gooch's Daddy Hundreds and whatever, which has become very much part of our coaching speak and our environment speak, has gone up and down the leagues. And when I look in Premier League cricket around the country, every Saturday in this country, I'm seeing scores of 150 plus from club players, and that was something you didn't often see registered when I was growing up in the club game.
It's worth mentioning as well that there are lots of benefits to this, but there are risks as well. If you're talking about working in a fatigue state, then you're also talking about increasing the risk of injury. And so it is something where you would be careful about who you do it with, because you want to make sure that person has got a pretty solid technique. They know what they're doing. they can, I mean, you don't have to be an elite level player, but you definitely have to be aware of the increased risks when working with players in a fatigue state, because when you're in a fatigue state, your technique starts to go, you can get into funny positions, and you can end up getting an injury that you wouldn't get if you were doing it fresh.
Yeah, exactly right. And that would be one of the reasons why I probably wouldn't have that exercise phase being quite so long. I might have it being really intense, and I'd use it more as a heart rate raiser rather than, you know, to fatigue the legs so much that they go to jelly or whatever the case may be. So, and you can do that, you know, just by getting somebody to do 15 burpees rapidly. You know, by the time you finish doing that, you'll have sore legs and you'll have your heart rate raised, and that will probably, you know, take 10 to 15 seconds to complete.
Okay, let's go into the yes-no round. We've got three questions, and they can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that we want to say. Okay, so here's the first question. First question, wicketkeeper and first slip have the same skill requirements?
No.
No. Second question, target bowling is better than bowling to a batsman?
No.
No. Third question, talent is habit?
No.
Yes. It's time now to open up the mailbag and pick out a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to this very show, or maybe they're readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. We don't discriminate in any way. If you've got a question about coaching cricket, then we will try and help you answer it. And we will pick a winner, which wins a prize of a coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Harshal is the first person who sent in a question this week. And he says, whenever I bowl, it always takes me two or three overs to find my line and length. I've tried longer warm-ups, but it's always the same. Can you help?
Well, I don't know necessarily if you need a longer warm-up, and it doesn't sound like that's been working for you, actually. So yeah. I think from a physical perspective, there's some activation work that you can do to get the body into a state where you can hit the first two or three overs a bit harder and a bit better, and then hopefully settle into line and length. And you know, if you're a fast bowler and you're down at fine leg, I've seen bowlers have bits of kit down at fine leg and maybe even a medicine ball or whatever to drive a few balls into the ground just to activate the body. You know, a few squat jumps, whatever the case may be, which isn't necessarily a warm up. It's a bit more dynamic than that, really. And then getting into the first few balls of your spell might take you less time to acclimatise and adapt to what you've got going on around you. And somebody like Stephen Jones would often have bits of kit down at fine leg, and you'd give him a nod, and by the time he'd come on the bowl, he had a bit of a sweat on and he was ready to go. And I think that could work. So I'd suggest you having a little look at that, and that would be useful. But I reckon the other thing to consider, and I heard a brilliant quote yesterday, because I'm doing the level four interview process at the moment at the end of the 2 years, where the guys go through their modules and then they have to come and demonstrate their competency and their knowledge. And Carl Crow, who's one of the spin coaches, and he assesses the spin in our technical room, and he does a great job of it. And one of the things he says is that Shane Warne talks about when you attack with the ball, you defend with the field. And when you defend with the ball, you can attack with the field. And really what that's telling me, I suppose, is that we can make our field work for us in that context. And, you know, most bowlers aren't going to come on and absolutely hammer out length, whether it be as a spinner or whether it be as a seam bowler when they first come on. But if their field is appropriate and it's informed, then if you do miss your line in length, all of a sudden your analysis isn't going to be massively effective. And then the pressures that you're under, if somebody bangs it out to deep cover rather than it going whacking up against the boundary fence, you know. So I think use your field, really, to give yourself a chance to settle into it. Because two or three overs might seem so long to get into your spell, but give yourself a bit of a chance. Work out where you get hit for boundaries in that first period or where you get scored off of, and plug it. You know, make sure that good shot goes for one rather than going for four, because then you'll find that you'll probably settle in because the pressure won't be quite so significant. So a combination of those two things, I think, would be worth giving a go.
I like that. We have a spinner in our club who probably takes this even further in terms of the psychological side. If he doesn't bowl a decent ball first ball, he pretty much gives up. Well, it's not going to be my day today. And that gets in his head straight away. Oh, it's not going to be my day today. Mm-hmm. And then it's not. Yeah. And I've never seen him. I've often seen him bowl brilliant, long, accurate spells. Mm-hmm. As long as that first ball is either roughly on a correct line and length, or the batsman doesn't try and smash it because, you know, he bowls a full toss and the batsman pats it back because he's having a look. It's one of those. And then he'll bowl a brilliant long, you know, 15 over spell where it's great, and he's a restrictive type of spinner, so he'll be very restrictive, take a couple of wickets, and everyone will give him a clap at the end. But if someone hits that first ball through the covers for four, that's it, you know, three overs, and he said, oh, it's not my day today, Skip, and he'll be off. So maybe that's another way of looking at it. Think to yourself, okay, well, I've got myself into a bad situation by bowling a couple of bad balls early on. That happens. That's always going to happen. Everybody does it. Let's just refocus, reset the mind, try and bowl that, start from now, try and bowl that good ball from this next ball, because that last ball's already gone and there's not really very much you can do about it. So give, as you said, Gareth, give yourself a little bit more of a break. I don't know whether it's quite as bad as that spinner that I described for Harshal, but if you give yourself that break, then you might find that you relax a little bit more, and you find that when you relax with those shoulders less tense, you find you get into your rhythm a lot quicker.
Yeah, Warner used to talk about, you know, if he came on to bowl, he'd fire the first few balls, not bowl it as quick as he could, but he'd bowl it a bit quicker. And try and hit the guy on the pads. You know, not necessarily to get him out LBW, but try and hit the guy on the pads from bowling a length ball. The ball might not have a huge amount of rip on it.
Yeah.
And just give himself the best chance of not being scored off and just allow the body to get in. And then obviously you can work your strategies and you can work your bowling action to become more attacking over time. And he was very good at doing that. And then there was a guy called Otis Gibson, who was West Indies coach. And whenever he used to bowl, invariably in four-day cricket, he'd run up and bowl a bouncer first ball, and quite a high one. And by doing that, he was using the actual delivery itself to sort of stretch himself and get his body ready to bowl a bit differently. Now, not everybody's got a bouncer in them that they can bowl, but I think the point being is that if you've got a ball that you know is going to be almost like it's going to be really difficult to score off of, but it allows you to get a couple down there at the start of an over, start of a spell to get you into it, then that would be great. And yeah, Glenn McGrath often used to bowl a length ball at sort of six stump, which would go through to the keeper. Nobody's going to have a big flash at it outside off stump, particularly in longer format. And all of a sudden, his body's getting into that bowling action, into the spell, and he's nova in. He hasn't gone for too many runs, and then he can work on tightening his lineup a little bit to make the batter a little bit more vulnerable.
Would you say possibly as well, there's also a case for looking at the action and seeing if you can eliminate anything that might be extraneous that is stopping him from having a more of a rhythmical action, and it takes him a while to get into it because he's got a lot going on in the action. I think, especially with spinners, you can have a lot of arms waving around and things, can't you, in the run-up?
Yeah, and obviously the more simplified things are, the more repeatable they're going to be, and then the results are going to be more consistent at the start of a spell. So yes, it's very much worth looking at your action, and the more movement, I suppose, that you introduce into any action, probably the less likely you are to be able to get yourself into a spell. So yeah, definitely worth looking at. I mean, you know, you should always look at technique, but I think whilst we can't really advise specifically on his technique because we don't know what it looks like, I would also back it up with some of these strategies that we've talked about. We've come out with three or four there, and maybe a combination of one or two of those give you a chance to get into a spell a bit better.
So go for it, Harshal. Maybe work on a few things in the nets, see what you can find out in those first few balls when you're bowling in the nets, and work from there. Next question is from Bonga, our good friend Bonga. But he is in trouble, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it looks that way.
He says, I've been recently dropped from my school A team after a dismal tour. The reason for this is my inconsistency and lack of game time. I missed the first part of the season due to injury. It's hard to work on consistency on my own, as I only have 2 free days. how can I get back into the A-team?
Well, I think expectation management is something that you've got to look at. You know, you've obviously had an injury at the beginning of the season, which has disrupted your flow, hasn't it? You know, you've not had the same amount of volume that you would do in a normal season. You haven't got the same amount of volume as some of the people that maybe you're competing for the same spot. So I think we've got to be realistic in that. Unless you're one of the top players in your team and you've got a fantastic performance record, the chances are that you're not going to get given a go if you and kept being selected if you're not performing. I would look at it more as an opportunity, really, and just because you'd be playing in a B cricket, I assume B team cricket. And really, I'd say to myself, right, I'm going to enjoy myself now as much as I can between now and the end of the season, and just go about it that way. Because I think sometimes we lose that enjoyment factor. We lose the thing that actually got us playing cricket in the first place, because we put ourselves under too much pressure to perform. And particularly with your injuries at the beginning of the year, I'd just go and play some B team cricket and have some fun. And by doing that and engaging in the fun aspects of the game, I'd be fascinated to see how your results go. And it could be that if you play with fun and play with a smile on your face, then all of a sudden, whether it be with a bat or ball, results have been going to pick up, and all of a sudden you become more consistent, you become more effective, and all of a sudden the A team selectors are going, well, actually, do you want to come back and play for us?
It's a matter of relaxing and enjoying what you're doing, as you said, Gareth, but I would also say that it's important to know what you're trying to do. If you're saying that you're inconsistent, what is that really? Because it's easy to say someone's inconsistent, especially when it comes to batting. There's always inconsistency. Nobody scores 50 every week. Nobody scores 23 every week. You know, your average is mathematical calculation. It's not a thing that happens. So I think it's important to know what you mean when you're talking about consistency as well. What does that mean to you? Does it mean improving your average, or does it mean scoring a certain amount of runs, or taking a certain amount of wickets, or taking pressure off yourself and just seeing how it goes? So maybe fleshing it out a little bit more on what that means to be consistent, and then you can build up some practice and some play around that.
I would suggest as well to Bonga that he goes on the internet and has a look at somebody like Sachin Tendulkar's Manhattan graph. And the Manhattan graph is all of his innings in Test cricket.
Yeah.
And how it pans out. So obviously your skyscraper is going to be taller with the bigger amount of runs that you get. And if you get naught, then you're not going to have a skyscraper at all. And it's quite telling, because we look at people like Tendulkar and we look at people like Bradman, and we look at the greats in the world, and we have this perception that they are consistent, and the fact is that they're not, and they are the best players in the world, but they haven't been consistent. In fact, in Sachin's one, there are four or five periods where it's a good old lean spell. It's something that we've all experienced in our lives, and then all of a sudden he'll go 170, 200, 120, and all of a sudden he's back on track again, and then there'll be another dip. So have a look at it, because sometimes our perspective and our expectation of what consistency is wrong. And so I'll back you up on that one. But there's loads of Manhattans. You've only got to stick in a name, and with Manhattan on it, you can go to the ICC rankings and have a look at that, how their ranking points go up and down, which is linked to their performances. And you see that, you know, there isn't such thing as a really consistent cricketer in world cricket. It's just that the good ones, when they are going well, make sure that they go as well as they can for that period of time, and they cash in, whether it be in the wickets column or whether it be in the runs column.
Do you think that is more of the case for batsmen than it is for bowlers? I think possibly for bowlers, you can be a little bit more consistent. I mean, there's still going to be those ups and downs, of course, but you can be a little bit more consistent. Whereas with a batsman, because that innings can end at any time, and often it can be for no fault of your own, there is the opportunity to be a little bit more consistent as a bowler than as a batsman.
I suppose there is. The nature of the two disciplines are like that, aren't they? Because you bowl a filthy long off outside off stump, we go for four, you still get another go in most cases.
Yep.
So there is a case of that. But actually, when you look at the rankings of bowlers, and with the exception of somebody like Dale Steyn, for example, who's been at the top of the game for a long period of time, people do go up the rankings and down the rankings as bowlers. So yeah, I think you're probably right that the individual discipline comes into play on that one, and but you know, people in terms of consistency, people aren't, you know, we're not made to be consistent really when it comes to performance. That's not the way it works. You look at even somebody like Usain Bolt, you know, he looks to peak, doesn't he? Not necessarily run 9.9 every single time he runs. So I don't think a human is ever going to be in a position where they just go out and nail it every single time. I don't think that's what performance is about. That's what makes sport so fantastic to watch, because we don't ever really know what the outcome's going to be. We know that Sachin Tendulkar, if he gets to 50, he's going to score more hundreds than me, but that's about it.
So I think what we're saying, I think the message there, especially from you there, Gareth, is that you can get quite granular, you can get quite detailed, but it's also important to sometimes just to relax and go, okay, well, you know, this has happened. The best thing I can do about it is to just go and play some cricket and
see it as an opportunity. That's the crucial thing.
See it as an opportunity
to have some fun. You'll find that your performances start to rise, and it may be that you're back in the A side before the end of the season.
And if you're not, for any reason, then there's a whole new season ahead where you can have another go.
Exactly right. It's only when they get to sort of my age that doesn't happen. From our previous correspondence with Bonga, we know he's got many, many years ahead of him.
He has. He's a very young man, so he's got lots of time to get into the A team and beyond. Good luck, Bonga. Let us know how you get on. It's time for the soapbox. 60 seconds, where one member of the team can talk about anything they like. And you may have noticed from his lack of speaking this week, Sam Lavery isn't on the show. But don't fear, he's pre-recorded a 60-second soapbox for us. So, Lavers, over to you this week.
Okay, what I'd like to talk about is just how coaches have built a relationship between themselves and how they actually look to try and get the best out of the cricketers that they have working with them. One of the things that I've come across recently is a desire for some coaches to own players almost, where they feel that certain players are their responsibility and certain players shouldn't be going and talking to other coaches to get new ideas. Now, ultimately, I think that the too many cooks can spoil the broth, and that can be a situation where too many different voices and too much confusion can make a cricketer's life, especially a young cricketer's life, very confusing given the different teams and levels that they're playing at. However, it's quite simple if you can establish a line of communication amongst coaches and again amongst the cricketers involved and potentially parents if that's what's required, then that can become a much more seamless process and it can become a lot more, a lot clearer for the individuals concerned and ultimately can benefit the cricketer, which is what we're looking to do as individual coaches.
Fantastic. It's a bit prima donna, isn't it, to come in? It's a bit like I listened to Chris Evans interview Jennifer Aniston the other day, and that was on tape as well. Just like it. It's exactly the same, isn't it? Maybe it's Jennifer Aniston.
Yep, the similarities are many. The haircut, mostly. That is the end of the show for this week. We've answered a couple of questions, but now we've got to get out of here. But before we go, we're just going to decide on the winner of this week's competition. Of course, the prize is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Harshal's question about finding his line and length early on, and Bonga's question about restoring his consistency. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Harshal's question this week. I thought it was a good one and something that we're all likely to experience at some stage in our careers. And for many people, it might be something that happens on a more regular basis. So a few coping strategies around that, and all of a sudden you get into your spell better.
Yeah. I like the phrase coping strategies. I like that. There's a lot of modern turns of phrase that I don't like. I just find them a bit jarring or a bit kind of, you know, they're hiding what they really mean and things like that. But I think coping strategies is absolutely dead on. So I'm going to definitely put that one into my dictionary of approved terms.
Good man.
Now, Gareth, if someone was thinking to themselves that they want to have their question answered as well, how could they get in touch with the show?
Well, David, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, that's right. Of course, if your question is selected, you also win the prize of the online coaching course. And there's other ways of getting in touch with us via social media, mainly. Our Twitter is at PitchVisionAcad. You can find us on there. And you can find us also on Facebook at facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. Well over 40,000 people talking about all aspects of cricket every day there. So pop over, say hello, give us a thumbs up. And if you want to send us a question privately or publicly, there's a way of doing that. If you want to listen to this show every week, and why wouldn't you, then you can subscribe to the show using any podcast app. You can use iTunes, that's very popular, or you can get your iPhone and use the podcast app on there, or if you've got an Android phone, there's plenty of options as well. There's Pocket Cast, Dogcatcher, lots of free ones or paid ones, take your pick. You do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us in there. And if you want to do it the old school way, you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link. And there's all the information about the RSS feed if you want to go along those lines. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.